Welcome to Smart Healthcare Safety from ECRI, the most trusted voice in healthcare, committed to advancing effective, evidence-based care. I'm your host, Paul Anderson, and for 15 years, I've overseen our risk management membership programs here at ECRI. Tens of thousands of healthcare leaders rely on us as an independent, trusted authority to improve the safety, quality, and cost-effectiveness of care across all healthcare settings worldwide. You can learn more about our unique capabilities to improve outcomes at www.ecri.org. Today, we're talking about the so-called five rights of medication safety, a memory tool that's intended to help promote safe medication administration, but that has real shortcomings as a safety strategy. Our guest is Susan Paparella, Vice President for Services at the Institute for Safe Medication Practices, or ISMP, an ECRI affiliate. Before we get into some of the limitations of the idea of the five rights, Susan, can you describe what they are and what the problem is that they're intending to solve?
So the five rights is really this broadly stated set of expectations that's most often associated with the act of medication administration. It's often taught to nursing students as a memory aid when they first learn about medication use. These five rights include the right patient, the right drug, the right dose, the right frequency or time, and the right route. And the core belief of this phrase is that if the nurse were to follow the five rights, it somehow will protect them from doing the wrong thing during medication administration, such as administration of the medication to the wrong patient, or giving the wrong drug, or by the wrong route. And so nurses are often asked in their programs to memorize the five rights, and sometimes they're even tested on their ability to recall the five rights. It symbolically has been associated with being a good nurse, right? It's almost like taking a pledge. It's interesting because over time, organizations have really, begun to address their challenges with medication administration by coming up with additional rights. Sometimes it goes up to 10 or 12 rights, such as the right indication or reason, or right monitoring, right history, right to refuse, right drug interaction, or right response. So there's a lot of rights that our nurses are now expected to comply with, if you will.
So where does this concept come from? You mentioned it's taught in nursing schools, things like that. Do we have a sense of where it started?
Yeah, well, that is a great question. The origin of the five rights, although it's been recited by decades of nursing students, has not really clearly been established. We've actually at ISMP looked for a number of years for this origin and were unable to come up with it. And in fact, if anyone does have information on that, we would love to hear from you. Tracking it back, we know this has been used as a memory aid in fundamental nursing textbooks since the 1950s and 60s. Mm. And we also have had conversations with nursing faculty that have been, practicing as far back as the end of World War II, that recall using this in their education of students. The challenge with this is that it's just a lot of passing it down over the generations of nurses, but there's not any historical empirical evidence that it makes a difference in terms of safety.
Kind of an oral history type situation.
Definitely.
Yeah. So, as a layperson, I'm not a nurse. You are, I'm not. As a layperson, it sounds pretty reasonable to me, right? I want those things to be right when medication is administered, so seems all right. What are some of the shortcomings?
Well, as I mentioned, the five rights has long been perpetuated as this really gold standard for safe medication use. But evidence shows us in the areas that we've investigated and that have been publicly reported over the years that even lethal errors have occurred in situations where nurses firmly believe that they had verified the five rights and patients are still harmed. So you have to remember that the five rights are really nothing more than these stated goals without any evidence-based strategies or procedural guidance on how to achieve them. It's almost like saying, just do it, right? Mm-hmm. So somehow believing that this list of rules will keep a patient safe doesn't take into account the complexity of the latent systems in which we work, or the role of performance-shaping factors that play in us being able to reach these goals. So in short, it just really oversimplifies what is a very complex process.
It's that idea of just be careful is not actually safety advice.
It is exactly that. It's, you know, we tell them, in fact, recently when, again, doing some, you know, study on this, we found some other related phrases in the nursing text that we say, like, be careful or don't be sloppy, you know, was another one of our favorites. But we have to really examine the effectiveness on the prevention of errors. And when we think about the hierarchy of how we protect patients from error, actually just telling people to be careful is really the lowest strategy, because it focuses on creating perfection of individual performance. And we all know that human beings are flawed. Mm-hmm. So if we really want to improve medication safety, we just really have to spend our time making our systems more reliable to have a good outcome. Remember, it's not the perfection of the individual that we seek, but the ability of our systems to produce the good outcome.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, to our point earlier about just how pervasive this idea is, I know that this idea of over-reliance on the five rights was actually one of our top 10 patient safety concerns this year from ECRI and ISMP. And we looked at some data in our patient safety organization around the five rights. Can you describe a little bit about what we found there?
Sure. So we looked at data in the ECRI and ISMP PSO database, and we had about a little over 80 events between January of 2021 and October 2022 that referenced the phrase, you know, the five rights. And about a quarter of these mentioned the five rights were part of this corrective action plan, meaning that somehow, you know, after this event has occurred, they were either going to or already had, re-educated the nurse about the five rights. Or another 20% mentioned that they had a secondary strategy, or the five rights would be a secondary strategy. Like they might have had a system issue to fix, but they also were going to educate the nurse again. And about a fifth of the events that we looked at used it to place blame on the individual, somehow saying this happened because the provider didn't follow the five rights, and or someone mentioned it in their investigation saying it was caught because someone followed the five rights and the problem was really created by another practitioner, but because they followed the five rights, they were able to catch it. It's sort of interesting. It does come about pretty regularly in the reports that are received. And I think it's also interesting to know that sometimes people are perplexed in a way about the fact that there occurred despite the fact that they followed the five rights. So again, they're seeing this in their own information and data, but it does confuse them because they think somehow that rule that was followed didn't work the way it should have.
And they're sitting there thinking, boy, I did everything right and something still happened. What else could I have done?
Right, yeah. And, you know, I think the other thing, if I can just say too, that, you know, when we see these sort of these statements in the error reports, really emphasizing the five rights during the review of med errors really tells us that maybe the team has prematurely and really inappropriately been misled or come to this false conclusion that somehow the individual was at fault.
Yeah.
It really ignores two errors human, and it makes the individuals or teams blind to maybe other systemic latent failures that still exist.
Yeah. So that leads perfectly into my next thought, which is if these ideas are baked into so many people's individual sort of thought process, right, around medication safety, how do we start to, you know, educate leadership about shifting away from this? Five rights is not a corrective action, right? Failure to follow the five rights is not the root cause of an event. So how do we start to shift that mindset?
Right. Well, you did hit the nail on the head there. It's just, you know, again, it's something that goes back to what, you know, nurses and maybe other practitioners learn early in their careers and maybe have perpetuated for many years. So, if we're going to try to affect this, I think it's vitally important for all leaders in healthcare, not just nursing leaders, but physicians, pharmacists, patient and medication safety officers, risk managers, quality managers, to stop propagating this myth, right? That somehow that rule, following the five rights, will keep patients safe. We've got practitioners are human. We've got them innately involved in the medication use process and will always be vulnerable to mistakes. So we can't use it as a red rule or, you know, the golden rule in which nurse competency is measured or punishment is determined. In fact, you know, if we just would admonish, say, one practitioner for making a mistake or human error, it does nothing more, you know, than to make it difficult for that individual, right? It doesn't remove risk from the system. All it does is just point the finger at the individual. And, you know, what happens, unfortunately, is when you start to punish human error in a system, it often will backfire. You know, other colleagues are aware of the outcome that someone made a human error and they got punished. And so they're less likely to speak up about the hazards and the errors in the future. So in the end, you know, it backfires because the system vulnerabilities remain untouched and the system remains just as unsafe.
You know, I've seen ISMP describe the five rights as a destination without a map. I love that analogy. That really brings it alive. So I guess my question that leads me to, though, is what should be on the map? If this is not it, what are those things that we want to sort of bake into our, I don't know if it's the investigation of adverse events, what are those kind of things we want to replace it with?
Yeah. It's thinking about how do we approach this from a different angle, right?
Yeah.
And we do use that map analogy as a metaphor because we think of medication safety as a journey. We know it's not, you know, as black and white as just here, do these five things. We would probably say that the roadmap, if you're sticking to the analogy, is really the medication safety strategic plan. And this strategic plan should be congruent with the organization's patient safety plan and overall goals. You know, how are we going to enhance the reliability of our systems and support staff to avoid those at-risk behaviors? How are we going to coach staff ahead of errors to make safe choices before they occur? Having that plan is an important first step. And we also look at the other things that organizations that have a robust medication safety focus have on their map, if you will. These are characteristics like they understand the importance of involving interdisciplinary teams, including frontline staff, to look at their processes and to improve medication safety. They also, many of them, have robust reporting systems with good feedback mechanisms that can get that right back to the frontline provider. So the reporting individuals know that they were heard about the hazards and concerns they had, and it just didn't end up in a black hole. Somebody was actually doing something about it. And,
sure.
You know, it all comes back to, again, feeling that you know, you've got organizational buy-in to the belief and tenets of a just culture, if you will, that, you know, we have to stop believing that the five rights, it's only created as a memory aid, is somehow going to be the answer to all of our problems around medication use. And I think perpetuating that myth is really, you know, our biggest challenge in this area.
Well, that's fantastic. Susan, thank you so much for joining us today.
Sure. Thanks, Paul. It's great to be here.
To learn more about ISMP's medication safety work, visit ismp.org. You can register to download ECRI and ISMP's annual Top 10 Patient Safety Concerns report at ecri.org. Be sure to subscribe to Smart Healthcare Safety on Spotify, iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts to get our latest episodes. Visit us on YouTube at youtube.com/ECRI Institute to see our new video series, ECRI Now, with more insights from our experts. We welcome your feedback. Visit us at ecri.org or email us at ecri-podcasts@ecri.org.